is the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
And good afternoon. Happy Friday. Jessica Hayes with you today, filling in for Belinda Varaschetti today and for the next few weeks. And it's so fantastic to be catching up with you this afternoon on what's a historic grand final eve. I wonder if you're heading to Perth for tomorrow's grand final. If so, how far you're travelling to get there and who you're backing in for the win. I'd love to hear from you this afternoon. Send me a text on 0448 922 604. And later in the program, after the news and the weather, you'll be catching up with the head of WorkSafe to discuss the practicalities and the details of those new workplace laws in WA and how they'll impact bushfire volunteers and other volunteers as well. Commissioner Darren Kavanagh will join me to address some of those concerns raised from local government staff and farmers throughout this week on the program. So if you have a question for the Commissioner, get in touch on the text line. That number is 0448 922 604. And before the news at 1 o'clock, you'll be catching up with 5-year-old Gordon Homewood, who lives on a station in the Midwest. You may recall he had a pretty impressive ear tag collection a couple of months ago. Well, that collection has since gotten even bigger. You'll hear more from him and his mum, Lara, later in the program. But kicking off today's show, if you've been to the supermarket lately, you probably noticed tomatoes are quite expensive. I visited the Canning Vale markets in Perth yesterday and was told growers are getting very, very healthy prices for tomatoes at the moment. Carnarvon grower Dan Kuzmicic is president of Vegetables WA. Dan, why are prices so high?
Yeah, well, I've noticed on the market report the cost of tomatoes have skyrocketed a fair bit, and that is essentially from basically a supply and demand issue. The story behind that is we've got a labour issue, which has influenced the production of tomatoes, and also with the wet weather that we've had in the earlier parts of this year, especially the first 6 months, we've had up to, 500 mils of rain. So the early tomatoes that were planted have been affected by moisture. They've got some fungi on it, which is called black spot, and some blossom end rot, which affects tomatoes pretty dramatically. So the quality has been a little bit down, and also the volumes have been down. In saying that, there has been from one nursery that supplies tomato seedlings to the Carnarvon region on orders on average so far this year is 600,000 plants down. So whether that's from people being taking a risk management approach of not planting so much and just managing what they can, or it's also with the weather factor, I think it's a combination of both.
So I was at the Canning Vale markets yesterday, and I'm told that the price of tomatoes is basically at a 1-in-10-year high at the moment. Can you walk us through exactly what the return is for tomatoes at the moment?
Well, looking at the market report online, which anyone can do if you register, you can see what tomatoes are coming in from certain regions around WA and also from interstate. So if you have a look at the, let's say, Gascoigne tomatoes in, depending on their packaging, 36-litre, 10-kilo cartons, it ranges, for an example, 10-kilo carton from $20 to $90. So that depends on the quality of that.
$90. $90. I mean, that's a remarkable return.
That's where the supply and demand kicks in. If there's not much around and you've got premium quality fruit, that's what it's going to fetch, because there's a lot of outlets that that require premium product on there and they're prepared to pay for it. You really need to target locally grown produce, which will take that effect out of the cost of the freight, especially the stuff coming from overseas, because that's, at the end of the day, the consumer will have to pay for that down the line. So if all else fails, then, of course, you have to purchase out-of-state produce. But I strongly recommend that all consumers just target locally grown. So at the moment, it's Carnarvon season. After Carnarvon, it will be Geraldton and the Perth season and the southwest, and just follow the seasons that way. The ground conditions aren't actually perfect for growing this year, but that's the state of of play at the moment.
I'm joined this afternoon on the WA Country Hour by Dan Kuzmicic, who is the president of Vegetables WA, also a Carnarvon grower. So, Dan, can you paint a picture of how this stacks up in a historical sense?
I remember back in 1998 is very similar as well. What happens is usually if a region has suffered, has had some cyclonic weather or had some unusual weather and affects the production, then another region usually wins. So obviously now that the Carnarvon season is down on numbers, Queensland, for example, will like to have a slice of that pie and start sending their produce over if there's a short supply. But that can work both ways. You can also flood the market. Obviously, this is justified because there's not much tomatoes around. But, yeah, historically, it does happen from time to time, and it's usually out of the control of the growers.
Mm. So, I mean, what does this mean for growers in the area in terms of reinvestment? Obviously, if you've got to focus on tomatoes, now's probably a time to reap those rewards and take advantage.
Oh, absolutely. If your on-farm hygiene is great and your processes of picking and packing and your quality assurance is great and you're ticking all the boxes, certainly this is a windfall for the tomato growers. In saying that, it is a headache. You'd rather have a constant year throughout with a good average price and less of a headache.
So tomato prices, very healthy returns for growers at the moment, not such good news for consumers, but has this translated to any other commodities being grown in the Carnarvon area?
Yeah, prices have generally been good late last year, going into this year, depending on the supply. Capsicums, eggplant, zucchinis were great early on. There has been an influx of aphids constantly coming through the region, which they carry the disease and viruses which they transmit onto the plants. For an example, we've lost the shade house of capsicums. For pure hygiene, we've had to rip them all out and keep it nice and clean. And then cost recovery kicks in, so we've seen that there's been a short order for tomatoes, and I've put some tomatoes into just for a cost recovery basis to grab some money back on the money that I've lost. But yeah, it has reflected onto other produce.
The other issue is labour. Where is the region at the moment in being able to source labour? Presumably it's starting to get a little bit hotter up there. How much of a worry is that over the next couple of months?
Yeah, traditionally, this is when late September, early October onwards, then it's going to fluctuate from cold to warm, cold to warm, then it'll just even out. The growers have been managing. They've been finding their way through employment agencies and just getting the way through it. I've been speaking to a few growers, a few banana growers and corn growers and stuff like that, and they're a lot happier now, let's just say, than a few months ago. They've got their head around how the system works, what they need to do, and what the process is. So, yeah, they're a lot happier now.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Country Hour this afternoon. I'll let you get to Perth. I know you're driving from Carnarvon to Perth at the moment.
All right, no worries.
Vegetables WA President and Carnarvon grower Dan Kuzmicic. You're listening to the WA Country Hour this afternoon. It's 13 minutes past one. Now, on yesterday's show, you will have heard CBH Geraldton Zone Manager Duncan Gray just talking about the start to harvest. Now, they've just received their first load of grain, so harvest is well and truly off and running. But with the current worker shortage problems, he's really stressing the importance of safety.
There's a lot of hours that people do. We just want to make sure everyone's really secure in what they're doing. Just by trying to go faster doesn't mean it's going to get done quicker. So be really, really flexible around that.
Now, if Duncan Gray's message to slow down and take care didn't hit home, then this one certainly might. Esperance Shire President Ian Mickle is recovering from a farm accident that happened just last week. He lost most of his middle finger while trying to fix some machinery required for harvest.
Well, it was Thursday morning. We were working out at the farm. We had a job to do. And we were endeavouring to pull the working parts of an auger out of an auger in a big bin. And in the process, something went wrong. And I still don't know what went wrong, but we looked at the job, and I had two very, very good employees there, Lyndon's two main employees, and just something happened. And why, I can't work out why my hand was where it was, but in a millisecond, my finger was partially amputated and the other one was pretty badly damaged in my left hand. And so it was off to the medical system to enter into that. But it was a job that, you know, I've done before. Yes, we were in a hurry that day. We wanted to get this job done, and the boys wanted to get out and do other work they had in the farm. But we did analyse the situation reasonably well, what we had to do. And so something just went wrong, and that's all I could say about it.
Oh, fungus. For people that don't know, what's an auger?
Well, an auger's for moving grain, and this auger lifts it out of a paddock bin, and then it runs into a truck, and the trucks pull up underneath it. And it's like a spiral on a shaft working inside of a piece of tube that makes it happen. And this is quite a large one, reasonably heavy. And so somewhere along the way, my fingers were in the road when it moved down less than 200 millimetres that moved. I mean, I still don't know. It must have just jammed somewhere and then moved quickly, and my hand was there, and I was must have been having a sleep, I think, Emily. I don't know.
Oh, it sounds horrible. So must have been very painful, and you're quite a way out of town at your place. What happened after the accident occurred?
Oh, well, we opened up the first aid box that's there in the workshop that we have for any of these sorts of incidents or minor incidents, and grabbed some padding from in there, I guess you would call it padding, obviously wrapped it around the fingers, and then decided it was off to town. And so I was driven in by Brett and straight to the hospital, and excellent from there on. It was great and excellent service. When we got into town here, they gave me a local anaesthetics, and so that they could go in and clean it up. And then Dr. Toby Pern was on duty. He worked on that. Then he rang he felt it was best to go to Perth and have it repaired there. So he rang and made arrangements for me to be seen at Fiona Stanley Hospital, at specialised hand surgery people that work there. They gave him some instruction. He booked an aeroplane, and the nurses looked after me immaculately in the Esperance Hospital. Really great effort. All very interested, all laughing that I'd cut fingers off before, and I was still cutting them off, I guess. But they were just so kind.
So you're missing your middle finger now, is it?
I'm missing the middle finger, yes. So yeah. The second to the pointer finger. As you can see there, I've got one that's all protected, and that's because the wire's in
very it. Very bandaged up. Almost a little cast on one of them.
It is a cast to protect the finger, so I don't damage it while the bone is healing. And on the other one, it's the short one. So I've got a pretty interesting hand.
Yeah, you said you'd cut some fingers off before as well.
Well, that one's when I was five. So
really, what happened then?
Once again, I don't remember a lot about it. Although I know I spent my fifth birthday in hospital, but that came from farm machinery as well. And so I don't, as I say, I don't remember much about it, but it just proves I'm a slow learner, I think, doesn't it?
Well, lucky, because it is your left hand, so you're right-handed, I assume?
Actually right-handed.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And you do have to shake a lot of hands in your job as Shire President, so.
Yeah, but the big problem is doing up buttons, and I thank the man who invented zips, especially for flies on trousers, because undoing buttons and doing up buttons with one hand wouldn't be very good fun at all. But no, managing fine. Back home last night, and I'm back into action this afternoon with council responsibilities. So that's all turned out very well for me. I'm a very lucky person, I consider, because it could have been worse.
So we're heading into the harvest, and I guess a lot of farmers are going to be pretty busy. What's the message from your accident, do you think?
I guess the message from my accident to everyone is just to take that time, look, prepare, look at where the risks are, and just shows you how quick something like this can happen.
Sage advice indeed. Esperance Shire President Ian Mickle speaking with Emily Smith about his accident last week. And you can read more on that story on the ABC website. Just do a search for ABC Esperance and Fingers and you'll find it. And Ian's even smiling in those photos despite that horrible ordeal. And you'll hear more on farm safety next week on the Country Hour. It's 19 past 12. Now, it was a big night for farmers in the state's south-southeast last night, with 150 people getting together to raise money for Lifeline. the big barbecue, as it was touted, was cooked by celebrity butcher Vince Garaffa with lamb donated by local farmer Scott Pickering. Tara de Langraaf caught up with the larger-than-life duo as the hot plates heated up.
Well, we're having a function for Lifeline to raise money for mental health. We're very supportive of it, and opportunity to donate some lamb to raise some money. I mean, we supported Vince for, I don't know, how long have we known you, Vince?
14 years. We've been working together, and he's been the rabbit with the battery. He just energises all of us.
Vince, the Lifeline cause is something very dear to your heart. Tell us why.
Well, when I was a kid, I had my own problems and I kept them to myself and I suffered a lot. It was pretty tough growing till about 16 to 17, and one day I won a butchering competition, and my private hell was that I used to wet the bed till I was 17, and I win this competition and I stopped wetting the bed out of maybe some personal self-worth. Later on in my life, I'd have the luck to meet Graham Mabry, who started Lifeline, and we did a radio show for 26 years. And the more money we raised, the more beautiful people like Scott we met. God pays you in mysterious ways.
He does, and you've spent all of those decades since cutting up meat, cooking it. We've got some of Scott's meat here in front of you because you're about to feed a lot of people tonight.
Yeah, we were scared in case we couldn't get a bit more than 50 people. We got 148. Everyone's banging the door down trying to come. But this place is special. Got an amazing reputation. The beautiful little brewery that they've built here at Lucky Bay is amazing. The manager is so supportive of what Scott and I are doing. And they've put so much in. Scott's put in so much meat. My shop has put in a lot of small goods. And we've rallied around and found some bread and vegetables, and we're just going to have the best night and finish off with my beautiful sister who's travelling with us. She makes the best nougat in Australia, so there's going to be a little tiny touch of that at the end for our sweets.
Scott, you often have Vince attend your shearing shed for your sales, for your ram sales. Yeah. What's it like being out here? I suppose it's a shed of a different kind, and it's a clientele of a different kind as well, but there's still majority people from the country getting together ahead of harvest.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. When Nigel approached me earlier on if he can get Vince down, we've discussed this for a while, and I rang Vince and they got the ball rolling earlier on, and it was great. You know, I mean, it's all about the regional areas. I believe, you know, mental health, everyone knows someone that suffers from it and all the rest of it. So, and it touches a lot of people, and I think it gets neglected in the regional areas. So, and I've been right behind the cause for a long time, and we donate every year to Vince's luncheon at his place. And, you know, and I think it's a big issue that seems to be a bit neglected in the wide open spaces. So opportunity like this to come along and raise some money and bring it out in the open, I think it's really good.
We're seeing some farmers starting to come through the doors, and there are some happy smiles because, look, lamb prices are up, commodity prices are up as well, but do you think it's just as important in good years to talk about mental health as in the tough ones?
I think because a lot of people mask it. I think there's a lot of successful people that you'd think there's no way they would never worry in the world, and a lot of those people have. It affects a lot of people in different ways, and I think that's why it's a growing thing. I think as people get more busier or successful, and then the lifestyle gets faster, a lot more people can't handle what's going on.
And Vince, for you, 148 people, what are you going to do to Scott's lamb to feed everybody tonight?
We went to the trouble to roll the best part, the loins, and we stuffed them with a veal mushroom pine nut filling, and cooked in these beautiful ovens. They are just going to be magical with some nice root vegetables to serve. They've made a beautiful gravy here before I arrived, so that's been taken care of. And the house crew, we're very proud of their support. We always walk out of these functions, and the beautiful Scott has walked out of many functions over the years, pardon me for getting emotional. We float out. We float out because we feel good, because we know we're helping others. We weren't put on this earth to look after ourselves. Okay, we have to look after each other. There's no such thing as a self-made man. Before a guy's 21, there's been 3,000 people involved in raising him and looking after him, and a mother, of course, that's done more than anybody. So we just need to make sure that some of the sisterhood that's out there, where a lot of women cry on each other's shoulders and share and aren't scared to be emotional, that we start transferring some of that to men. There's no harm in loving your brother, okay, because that's what you need to do. You need to care. You need to ask the question. A hello can save a life.
How lovely and how true. Vince Garaffa from Mondo Butchers and Cascade Farmer Scott Pickering. They were speaking to Tara DeLangraff. And it's going to be another big night again for the Esperance farming community with the official launch of the Esperance Ag Fund at Lucky Bay Brewery tonight from 4 to 6 o'clock. No doubt our reporter Tara DeLangraff will be there front and centre with a pint glass in her hand.
The WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Jessica Hayes with you this afternoon on the Country Hour and for the next few weeks, actually. And it's so good to have you along this afternoon. A text in on the text line talking about the AFL Grand Final tomorrow. This one from Jamie and Manjima. It says, "Can the D's?" I reckon there'll be a few people on board. I'm certainly jumping on board that bandwagon, and we'll catch up with Richard Hudson to see who he's backing in that grand final shortly. If you'd like to join the conversation this afternoon, the number is 0448 922 604. Soon you're off to the newsroom to get some headlines, and before the news at 1 o'clock, you'll get the details of this week's Wool Market with Danny Burkett. But because it's Friday, here's some feel-good vibes for you. Do you remember Gordon Homewood? He's a five-year-old ear tag collector from the Midwest. Gordon lives with his family on Wandanong Station near Mount Magnet, about 4 hours northeast of Geraldton. Now, when you last caught up with Gordon, he wanted to create an ear tag collection of 2 100s or 200 tags. Well, when the word got out that he was collecting those ear tags, he started receiving tags in the mail from all over the place, including from overseas. And Joe Prendergast caught up with Gordon and his mum, Lara Jensen, who have been overwhelmed with the response.
So, Gordon, how many tags have you got in your collection now?
Well, 462.
462
cattle tags.
Wow, 462 cattle tags. Gordon, what about sheep tags? Have you got any of them?
Yeah, 120.
We've got 120 total, which is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gordon, what's it been like when all of these parcels have been turning up in the mail for you?
I feel happy because those people are being so nice.
When I came and saw you a couple of months ago, Gordon, you told me that you were hoping to get 2 100s of tags. You've now got almost 600. You've got well over 500 tags. Is there room for any more in your collection?
Well, yeah.
You're still chasing more, are you?
Yeah, I want 555.
Yeah, that's a pretty good number, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Where have these tags?
Or maybe more.
Maybe more? Are you able to count them all? Is that, it's a pretty big number.
Yeah, I can count up to 500.
We've counted them a few times now, the collection, haven't we?
Yeah.
Is it lots of fun for you and Mum having all those tags going around the house?
Yeah,
more fun to him.
Hey, Gordon, can you tell me about any of the places that some of these tags have been coming from?
Melrose, because Mary and David were there.
Yanwee,
because Colby was there. And Rocky, the Cryobomb, because he was a very good job on outback winger and he's very good at catching balls.
Yeah, Lockie McClimate's mum and dad. And Lockie sent us a tag, and Gordon loves that one. And where else do they come from, mate? What other states?
Queensland, and I have one from Ireland and Canada.
Get one from Canada?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Tell me about that one. What colour is it, Gordon?
Red.
Gordon, what are you going to do with all of these tags? What's the plan?
Going to make a special draw for for them, like my friend Russell, because he sent me lots of tags, half of his collection work, which was a box, and then he got me another box. Russell is a good man because he's been collecting ear tags too, just like me.
Yeah, and he's a bit older than you though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you like to say to those people who might be listening to us and have sent you some tags?
Thank you very much.
It's beautiful to see his little dream come true. It's been absolutely amazing. These tags have literally come from hell, west and crooked. They've come from every state. And most people have sent a lovely letter just telling Gordon something about their operation, you know, whether it's cattle or sheep or cropping, and a bit about themselves, which has been really beautiful. So it's a really lovely thing that people out there want to encourage kids into agriculture and support them with it. It's been really lovely.
Lara Jensen and her son, Gordon, speaking with Joe Prendergast. And if you're interested in reading more about Gordon's story, you can find it online by searching ABC Rural and Ear Tag, and you can see his very, very impressive and growing ear tag collection for yourself. It's coming up 28 to 1, which means it's time to get an update from the newsroom. Tony Carr is here. Tony, before we start, do you collect anything?
Jessica, let me think. I don't really. As a kid, I used to collect marbles.
Oh,
only,
yes.
Only so my bag would get bigger and bigger and then I could win.
You're showing your age there, Tony. I'm sorry.
Am. We used to play marbles at school. Tony, that's a long time ago.
What's making headlines this afternoon?
Now, Jessica, a 47-year-old man has been arrested after two bodies were discovered at a home in Capel in the state's southwest. Homicide squad officers are currently on their way to the scene on Berkshire Street. Police say the 47-year-old man is helping them with their inquiries. The federal opposition has accused the Treasurer of being all talk and no action on tackling climate change. Josh Frydenberg has used a speech today to press the case for a carbon emissions reduction target of net zero by 2050, but he's noted the government still hasn't decided to adopt the goal. The coalition is under pressure to take more ambitious policies to the Glasgow Climate Summit in November. And the New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, says reopening the state will be done cautiously and moderately. The state has today recorded 1,043 new locally acquired COVID-19 infections and 11 deaths. Ms. Berejiklian says the state is almost galloping to the 70% double dose finish line, but people's expectations must be tempered. Jessica, I'll be back with some more news at 1 o'clock.
Thank you for that update from the newsroom, Tony. To the Bureau now, and Noel Pusey is the duty forecaster this afternoon. Noel, let's kick things off in the Southwest Land Division. Things are looking pretty sunny and warm. First things first, what is Grand Final Day looking like in the Southwest Land Division?
Saturday, yes, it's not too bad a day. Easterly winds through most of the area there. There is a trough developing near the west coast and deepening during the day tomorrow. So easterly winds will continue over the southern half, but there will be the chance of late afternoon shower or thunderstorms through sort of northern parts of the central wheat belt, perhaps into far eastern parts as well through the parts of the Gulf, as the northern Gulf at least anyway, into the adjacent Gascoyne as well. So a little bit of thunderstorm activity there, but otherwise, pretty good day for the southern half. Sunny conditions, a bit less cloud than today. There's still a fair bit of cloud along the south coast, but it does burn off as we move a little bit further inland. And, good conditions through the rest of the state as well, really. In the north, it's clear over most areas there. Some morning fog at Broome has cleared, and a little bit of cloud sitting over the top of Broome at the moment, but otherwise pretty good conditions. We'll see those storms during Sunday redevelop again fairly early in the morning and extend to the south coast through eastern parts of the Great Southern and the southeast coastal district, and also perhaps even popping back further west around the low to lie over Perth and sort of the lower west and northern parts of the adjacent wheat belt, and also the central west district there too. So chance of storms through perhaps most areas during Sunday, and then the low sort of tracks off the coast to the southeast near Esperance. Things starting to contract to the south coast as far as the shower activity goes, at least anyway, for Monday. And we have another system developing out to the west. It looks like that will push through probably during Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, bringing some rainfall through most ag areas once again, mid Wednesday into Thursday. So we'll see how the pattern develops. That's a fairly long way off until then, but the main feature is this trough that's become a little bit active perhaps tomorrow afternoon and evening, and then bring those showers and storms on Sunday through much of the southwest land division.
So just how much moisture are we expecting over the next few days?
Not a great deal, I don't think. It's going to be very patchy stuff, a lot of mid-level thunderstorms, showers. We might get one or two mils possibly in sort of very patchy sort of areas there. You might pick up a little bit more if there is an actual thunderstorm developed through there, but I don't think it's going to be particularly significant.
Okay, and any warnings in place this afternoon, Noel?
Strong wind was current for parts of the west coast, really to the south of Kalbarri, and that's going to be pretty much it again tomorrow as well, although there'll be some strong wind warnings along the south coast tomorrow for coastal waters there too.
No worries. Thank you for that update, Noel. That's duty forecaster Noel Pusey. Now, with all the details of the rainfall for the last 24 hours, Richard Hudson is here, and he looks like a child on Christmas Eve. Is there much rainfall around, Richard?
No, hardly anything at all worth mentioning, unfortunately. I mean, the only real rain is in the southern coastal region. Some places had 2 mils, but the highest was Denmark with 4 and Jeremungup with 4. So let's hope there's a little bit more on the way.
Hey, thanks for that, Richard. The big grand final on tomorrow in Perth. Are you excited?
Yeah, I am. It's nice to have it here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's very exciting. Perth is buzzing.
Mm.
Have you got a ticket? That's what I want to know.
Nope.
No.
But you know what Tony Carr just said to me?
What?
I was dying for Jessica to ask me if I was going to the grand final, because last night he found out from his daughter that he is going.
Oh,
he's got 2 tickets.
Lucky
bugger. How cool is that?
Are you still hopeful? Oh, no, I don't. My sister-in-law and brother get to go with their ag supply company.
Yeah, typical.
But not us plebs. Are you still kind of hopeful of getting your hands on one?
Yeah. I might go last minute and just see if someone's, fallen off the back of a truck and can't actually get in, and I might try and hijack them on the way into the ground.
Yeah, good call.
My other option, I think that's probably leaving it a little bit too late, just reading through the names of the players in each of the teams for Melbourne. I'm just looking for the WA connections. You've got Cozzy Pickett, and he's got Quereting connections. I've got a few connections there. So, Luke Jackson, I believe he's not available until 2:30. That's a dad dentist joke. We'll move on. Yeah, with the Dogs, Aaron Norton, he's from WA.
Very handsome, great hair.
Yeah, I'd have to say, I noticed the same thing. Tim English, though, I'm just looking at his bio. He's actually from Brookton Pingelly. I'm wondering if he's got a farming connection there. I might...
You should try and get him up. We need to try and get in touch with someone knows Tim English. You go run off and do that, Richard.
Leave it to me.
And we'll see how we go with that one. Thanks for that update, Richard.
You're listening to the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Jessica Hayes in the chair with you this afternoon on the WA Country Hour. It's so fantastic to be catching up with you. If you'd like to be part of the conversation this afternoon, you can always flick us through a text on 0448 922 604. I'd love to hear from you today. But first, this week you've heard about some of the concerns being raised by local government staff and farmers about how new industrial relations legislation might impact stakeholders like volunteer firefighters. Now, the WA government's Work Health and Safety Act will take effect in January next year. And the headline change of it all is that it'll make industrial manslaughter a crime, with penalties like prison time and multi-million dollar fines possible for individuals as well as body corporates. But it's what these new rules mean in practical terms for Shire staff and bushfire officers that's really causing some concern. In particular, there are fears that it could actually lead to fewer volunteers. And this is what Chapman Valley Shire CEO Maurice Batalana had to say earlier this week.
I have heard of Brigade FCO, Fire Control Officers, saying they're handing the keys back because they're worried about what the ramifications of this could be. I hope that doesn't happen, because if legislation kills the community spirit, then the legislators need to be taken to task over that. My fear is the landowners will put the fire out themselves and not bother to tell anyone, because they know that they'll be steeped in bureaucratic nonsense and legislation if they do.
To address some of those points, including that point made by Maurice Batalana, who's the CEO of the Chapman Valley Shire, I'm joined this afternoon by WorkSafe Commissioner Darren Kavanagh, who's just stepped out of a meeting with an agriculture working group looking at this very legislation. Darren, as we've heard, there really does seem to be some genuine concern. People are so worried about this new industrial manslaughter legislation that they won't volunteer to fight fires from January. Are those fears justified? Have we got Darren? Have we got Darren there? We might just have to come back to Darren in one moment.
On ABC Radio WA, this is the WA Country Hour.
You're listening to The Country Hour. Jessica Hayes with you this afternoon on the program. A few texts in. Someone said Tim English's farm, English's parents' farm at East Pingerley. Well, I'll have to pass that on to Richard Hudson and let him know. In the meantime, I'm joined now by WorkSafe Commissioner Darren Kavanagh, who is back with me now. Darren, as we've heard, as I just mentioned, there seems to be some genuine concern that people are really worried. In fact, they're so worried about this new industrial manslaughter legislation that they won't be volunteering to fight fires from January. What's your take on that? Are those fears justified?
Good morning, Jessica. Thanks for having me. Good afternoon, I should say. I understand the concerns that are being raised, and I think the reason for that is that there's a degree of the unknown in relation to the work health and safety legislation. I would hope that people don't take the action that was intimated by the person you had on just earlier. From my perspective, the work health and safety legislation, I think, recognises the importance of volunteers. Volunteers are obviously a very important part of our community, and the legislation actually recognises that important element that volunteers play in our community.
How does it do that? How does it separate volunteer from, I guess, a professional environment?
Okay, so there's a few different elements, and I think it's important to talk a little bit about the detail, but I'll caveat by saying that I'll outline a little bit later the number of people and agencies that we're working with to provide that information. But volunteers are excluded in some circumstances from the work health and safety legislation. So volunteer associations that don't employ people or don't have people engaged are exempt. So I think that's a really important point, and I know that a number of your callers, listeners to the Country Hour will be concerned about bushfires, but we have volunteers in lots of other areas, so I think it's just important to make that point.
So just in simple terms, I am keen to clarify from the outset. So because there's a lot of concern from farmers and volunteer firefighters, as we've just mentioned there, can they be confident that they can coordinate bushfire control to the best of their ability in good faith without being prosecuted? Do any good faith provisions apply in these circumstances?
So the answer is yes, Jessica. You're using a term, good faith, which has some specific meanings in other pieces of legislation. So let me just distinguish that. The answer to your question is yes. The reality is that the legislation has obligations which already currently exist. In basic terms, people that have a duty under the legislation have to ensure that they look after their employees by providing instruction and training, that volunteers and workers need to look after their own health and safety. Now, those conditions are already part of the legislation, so they're not new. But what's happened with the work health and safety legislation is we've actually made it clearer that volunteers are part of the WHS legislation by putting in a definition. So, but the crux of your question is, if people are, you know, conducting those activities and they're doing the right thing, can they be prosecuted? And the answer is that they can't.
Okay. So the other thing that farmers are wanting to know is, who is responsible for their staff if they're volunteers and they go and fight a fire on another property? Does that change anything? Who's responsible in that set of circumstances?
Yeah, so the answer to that question is, depends on who's organising the activity. So if a worker on one farm goes to a separate location and does something in a separate area, the farm that they have left, that person would not have a duty under the work health and safety legislation. But the worker that is doing the work on the other farm, there is likely to be duties for that worker and for the people that worker is working for. So, I know there's a lot of concern that, you know, farmers have employees that go and do other things. They are not responsible if they leave the property and under the direction of somebody else.
So does that mean if I have a fire on my farm or on a, or if it's on a neighbour's farm, do they need to check the training and credentials of a volunteer before they're let in to fight that fire? Is that a requirement, and who does that?
So, yeah, there's two parts in your question, Jessica. If the farm owner has a worker working for them and that worker is asked to perform duties like fighting a fire on that farm, then there are health and safety duties there. And so answer your question in terms of the training is, yes, that worker should be trained and understand the risks that that worker is being asked to deal with. It's a different answer if that worker leaves that premises and is doing something else for another entity.
So ultimately, does that equate to increased training and compliance for bushfire volunteers and their equipment as well under this new legislation?
I think in some instances the answer is yes to that, Jessica. There will be a range of people that perhaps aren't aware of their current requirements, and you know the work health and safety legislation coming in next year. Well, you know, there's an increased concern, there's a lot more discussion, and so I expect that there will be an increase in training in some circumstances. And for me, that's a good thing. I mean, what the legislation is trying to do is ensure that people are provided a safe environment. And, you know, I don't think there's anybody saying that that's not a reasonable thing to do. The legislation is just making clear when that needs to occur.
I guess the point is that the reality is you probably can't take all of the danger out of a fire situation. It's a volatile, dangerous, moving situation. But I just am wondering, WA has, 20,000 volunteer bushfire volunteers who often use their own equipment in their own time. Do you seriously think it's realistic that they can comply with minimum standards based on what you've just said there?
So if a farmer is using equipment at that workplace, then yes, I do expect that that equipment is going to be safe. I mean, that's what the current requirements are. It's not acceptable that plant and machinery is used at a workplace that's unsafe. So the new laws, you know, are just an extension of the current laws, and I think that's reasonable.
There seems to be a consensus that it's just been difficult to get clear information about this new Act and its potential consequences for, you know, farmers, volunteers and shire councillors. How do you as Commissioner reflect on the communication that the Department has undertaken with those kinds of stakeholders so far?
Yeah, so we already have some information on the website in relation to volunteers, but, you know, the concerns that have been raised over the past week, I think, has increased the need to produce information. So I've had a range of conversations, as you said earlier. I've met with a range of representatives from the agricultural industry, the West Australian Farmers Federation, the Country Women's Association, Pastors Graziers. So yeah, I meet with them regularly, and their advocacy for the industry is really important in trying to provide information to people. I intend to meet with the Bushfire Association and talk with them about how the new laws are going to apply and provide some information then about how association volunteers can meet these duties.
Darren, thank you so much for being part of the Country Hour this afternoon.
Thanks, Jessica.
This week on Landline, why don't Australians want to do the heavy lifting on farms?
The opportunities in Australia for young people, there's so many opportunities. The idea of packing avocados in a tray 8 hours a day, 5 days a week is probably not overly appealing.
Controlling nitrogen runoff from the booming blueberry business, and could buffalo be the territory's black gold? That's Landline 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
Yes, and that story about the shortage of farm workers was shot in WA's southwest. It'll try to answer some of those questions like why don't Australians take up seasonal jobs on farms and why does agriculture rely just so heavily on overseas labour? So make sure that you tune in on Sunday because you'll hear Federal Agriculture Minister David Littleproud. He's not pinning his hopes on heaps of backpackers saving the day when our borders open. Instead, he says it's time for structural change in the workforce, and he's hoping that carrot of permanent residency to Southeast Asian migrants will achieve it. That story 12:30 on Sunday on Landline. Now, Richard Hudson has got a smile on his face. He's back in the studio at the moment. Richard, you've managed to track down Tim English's dad.
You gave me one job and...
You delivered.
I've delivered. We have managed to track him down. John, you excited for Tim tomorrow?
Oh, it's fantastic, Richard. Yeah, I don't know if you can hear the noise in the background, but I'm at the footy training, the grand final training at Optus Stadium just at the moment.
Fantastic. So who's actually training now? Is it his Bulldogs or the Melbourne Demons?
This is definitely the Bulldogs.
Have you managed to see much of Tim's since he's been back here in Perth?
Yeah, we've caught up with him quite a bit. I got out of quarantine at 9:30 on Sunday, so before that we were running errands backwards and forwards to the team hotel for the boys, you know, and needed a few bits and pieces. But, yeah, it's been great to be able to see Tim face-to-face since last Sunday, yeah.
Let's quickly get to the footy question. How do you think he's going to go up against the big, bald-bearded one, the favourite?
Look, I don't know. I just hope he enjoys it. I hope it's fun. I told him my final bit of advice to him was make sure he smiles. So look, hopefully they have a good day. And they're such a good team. I just hope that they, that it all comes together for them.
It's good advice. Winners are normally grinners, and vice versa, I think, probably happens as well. Hey, I was just saying to Jessica earlier, when you read through the footy budget, it says that Tim English originates from Brookton Pingerley Way. So are you guys farmers?
Oh, look, we were for, I think we were there for nearly 50 years, but we... got out of the farming business back in 2017. I've got two sons and they both didn't want to carry on the farming business. And, I was sort of mid-50s and thought, yep, this is getting a bit hard. So we packed up our bags and headed off, yeah.
That was around about the same timing that Tim actually got drafted, wasn't it? Just after the Bulldogs won their last flag.
Yes, that's right, Richard. It was Tim got drafted in at the end of 2016. So, we were quite involved with that. And then we handed our farm over to John Hassell. When was that? At the end of February in 2017.
President of WA Farmers. Wow, I didn't know that. Do you miss farming at all? Do you miss farming, John?
Look, I do. Look, once it's in your blood, it's sort of there forever. But I really do think it's a young person's game. And I don't know if you can hear that noise in the background. The crowd's going nuts. I think it's a young person's game, really. And the Hassells were a great sort of family, and we were keen for a family to take over our old farm. Yeah.
So. I would have thought Tim might have made quite a handy... person to have around the farm to put the hay bales on the top shelf. What is he? 207 centimetres, almost 6'8". Does he take after you? I gather you were a ruckman, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, back in the good old days.
We've lost Tim. We've lost Tim. Goodness me. We'll have to try and finish up. We'll have to try and get Tim back a little bit later in the program. But right now I'm actually joined by Danny Burkett for a wrap of the wool market, where the Eastern Market Indicator was up 16 to close 13.68. Here in the West, the market was up 5 to close 13.97. Danny, the market was up this week. Can you walk us through it?
Yeah, over the 2 days in Fremantle, the finer end enjoyed a reasonable lift, 18 microns, 35 clean dearer for the week, closing at $20.10, 19's up 10, 16.65 on the close, 20 microns, 13.50, that was also up 10, 21's closed at 12.50, 22's at 12.20, that was minus 5 for the 21's and par for the 22 micron, pieces and bellies up 20 on the finer end, that was regardless of VM, and the broader wools remained firm. Oddments, we saw locks, crutchings and stains slightly cheaper for the week. Lambs fully firm. If we just look back at the fleece wools, old wools that have been held that hold low yields and high VMs are being left behind as the fresh wools come onto the market with good yields. in those good yielding wools that are coming onto the market, the high and mid breaks are also not reflecting the full price rise we've seen in the market. So when they quoted the market 35 odd cents dearer this week, it has been the low mid break wools that have enjoyed the full whack of that 35 cents.
And Danny,
and I think as we go on, that will continue as it does most years for the next couple of months.
So who are the main buyers this week?
TNU, 17.1% of the market. That's the fleeceful market across the country. Techwell Trading, 13%. So there's a couple of the old cronies there leading the top and second position. Fox and Lillian Modiano behind those at 8.6 and 8.5. Just a matter of interest, Techwell Trading were the largest buyer in the crossbred and are also the largest buyer in the skirting. So again, Techwell Trading, very solid in the market. And if you looked at Fremantle this week, on the average, every bale that sold across the floor, $1,660 per bale.
And Danny, what's on for next week?
Next week, we have 41,562 bales between Sydney, Melbourne and Fremantle. I think we actually enter a nice little period here as we start to get some volume into the West Australian market that will attract some good business. But we're also in before we start to have those larger sales where I think we'll start to hit the 50,000 bale mark. When that happens, the Chinese seem to put the handbrake on a touch. But this is a little period we'll go through for the next 2 to 3 weeks where the offerings will be fresh, good yielding wools. So it should play out reasonably well in the market as we go into next week.
Danny, a fellow Eagles man, very quickly, who are you backing in on tomorrow's grand final?
Well, this is one of those good games where there's no emotion attached, so I don't mind who gets up. I'll sit back and enjoy the football for what it is for a change.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time this afternoon. Now, we've managed to get John English back on the line, father of Tim English, who's playing in, the big dance this weekend, and Richard Hudson is here as well. We just dropped off the line a little bit earlier. Now, I'm very keen to know, John, what are our chances of getting some tickets?
Good luck with that one, Jess. Our phone's been running hot.
Oh, bugger.
If you'd got in a bit earlier, maybe. we had about 10 or 15 lots of tickets for family and friends, so... got quite a contingent along to support Tim tomorrow.
Are you going yourself, I gather?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, Julie and I have actually been invited as guests of the chairman. So we've had to, first time I'll ever go to a football game in a suit and tie. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how it all goes. It's so exciting.
It'll be a great experience for you. Who's more nervous, you or Tim or Mum?
Oh, Mum's pretty nervous. Yeah. So she's standing there giving me the thumbs up at the moment. Oh, dear.
Just out of interest, what are you doing now? You said you got out of farming and you sold to WA Farmers President John Hassell, but what are you up to now?
Oh, look, I've done all sorts of things since I got out of farming. I worked for the City of Fremantle doing their broadacre mowing, doing their footy ovals and cricket grounds, etc., which was pretty good fun for a few years.
Broadacre mowing, I like it. You're still in broadacre.
Yeah, that's it, driving a tractor. So that was fun. And we were planning on doing lots of travelling around last year. We got the caravan and off we headed. But one thing and another, and with the COVID and... it made things a bit hard, so we got as far as Airlie Beach in Queensland, and then we turned around and headed home. So we did get to see quite a lot of Australia, but hopefully in another year or two we'll have another go.
Did you get to see Tim play over in the Eastern States whilst you were away?
Oh yes, we did. Yeah, we did. We went and watched the first half a dozen games or so in Victoria. The last game we saw was where they played the Brisbane Lions at Ballarat, and it was so cold. We watched that and then we decided we're packing up and heading north. That's when we headed up towards Queensland.
Oh, fair enough. Now, John, just quickly before we let you go, you'd be well aware that there is a shortage of workers in Western Australia and the grain harvest season is coming up. A lot of people would be listening to this going, I wonder if he's available to help out with the harvest.
Funny you should say that, Richard. I've already, one of my old friends has got me... come down and give him a hand for harvest back at Pingerley. So
you've been bagged.
Yeah, somebody's already grabbed me. Apparently the crops look beautiful, so can't wait to get back into it and without any of the worries that go along with it.
Well, what about Tim? What's he doing in a few weeks' time?
Yeah, well, you never know. He'll be on holidays, but was always a pretty good machinery operator.
Oh, there we go. If farmers have got a monkey wrench ready to go just to make sure they can slide the seat back in the machine.
Yeah,
those legs are pretty long.
They sure are.
John, all the best for tomorrow, and may the best team win. And
thank you.
I'll give you my phone number in a moment as to where you can just text through those spare tickets for Jessica and myself.
Yeah,
thank you very much
for
arranging those.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Not a problem, Richard. Okay. Thank
well,
you.
That's it for today's show and for the week. Thanks so much for joining us on the Country Hour this afternoon. I'll catch you from the same time on Monday. Up the D's. News time, 1 o'clock.